Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Buyers Auto, family-owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Who is this one?
I found her in the ocean.
Why is she in Miami?
To kill a dozen men.
Killers aren't born.
There you go. That's MIA. You can stream the entire first season now on Paramount Plus. James Dempsey's with us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
It's almost a trope, really, that the hero, their inciting character is that they lose a loved one, which gives them the permission then to murder as many people as they want.
Yeah, now I will say her family, you know, the inciting incident to this is our main character, who's got a good TV name, which is Etta Tiger Jones. Etta's entire family are slaughtered in a very graphic and brutal way in this first episode build up to then her rampage of revenge throughout the remaining 8 episodes. But yes, it does sort of just give her license to then commit equally graphic and brutal murders throughout. Like, all in, I will say, with a show like this, it is a kind of very classic crime, caper isn't right, but like revenge story where, yeah, you know, her family are killed and she is on the lam, on the run from the baddies who do not know that she's even still alive. And she decides that she's going to get her revenge on the 12. And of course, along the way, she runs into various obstacles, as well as support from her like chosen family, who are other immigrants to, well, not immigrants rather, to the Florida, to Miami in Florida, who have come from Haiti. She is native of Florida, but on the run. So basically has lost her social standing, has had to change her identity, is effectively being treated like, you know, someone fresh off the boat, literally.
Hmm.
And in it, what is kind of frustrating as a viewer, it comes from Bill Dubuque, I should say, who's best known for making Ozark, which was a very well-received show, yeah, grounded by really good performances from Jason Bateman and Laura Linney. And like here, you know, I'm going to say a quick cast, a quick look at the cast are a lot of unknowns to me anyway. Arguably the biggest star in it is Danai Garcia, who had a long role in Fear the Walking Dead, the Walking Dead spin-off, mm-hmm, and, you know, hasn't been doing, well, has been working very regularly since then, but not in things necessarily that, yeah, you would have seen. But our main character, Etta, is played by Shannon Hizella, I'm going to say. And she comes with a particular set of skills, which is that she has a photographic memory, which does come in, you know, quite useful when, yeah, you need to remember which of the 12 people you have killed and which ones are still living. But
well, you can make a list. I mean, it's not that great.
But the plot also generates a lot of... It kind of feels like the plot of a computer game almost, in the sense that like she's on a mission and then she meets exactly the right person at the right time who's able to propel her onto the next part of her mission.
Okay.
So look, what I would say going into this is go with the lowest of expectations and you will
not be disappointed.
You will not be disappointed.
You're not selling it there, James.
What it is is, it is, okay, so we have her story and then we have the story of the cartel that she is basically waging a cold war against. They don't even really know what's happening for most of the series. And in it, we have a subplot of them involving property development, siblings falling out with each other. Then there's also Cary Elwes, I mean, probably best known for The Princess Bride, but he's been in a million things, you know, along the way, plays this like private detective going around with a odd looking fedora and a few Hawaiian shirts here and there, asking a number of questions that you don't really quite know what his involvement in the whole show is. It is definitely, and I like, this is not me damning it with faint praise, it is not boring, right?
Okay.
Because, yeah, like the plot zips along at this silly little pace. It oscillates between extreme violence, and I mean like blood and guts and stabbings and shootings and flames, oh my, to then slapstick humor and like jokes and, you know, definitely meant to cut the tension humor that feel like an odd kind of compatriots in this story. Mm. And yet I'm not quite going to say it works, but like it just has enough energy to carry itself along the way.
Yeah.
It ends on a massive cliffhanger, which if you have not seen coming... You have not seen a lot of TV shows in your time.
Okay.
But clearly they are hoping that this will build into something for a second season. The jury is out on that. Will I be as patient with a second season if it's not a bit more, you know, well made? Probably not. But like as an original, you know, IP, original very much here in inverted commas, because this is, you know, fairly well.
It's a trope, really.
Trope, yeah. And I mean, like the whole show is built on tropes. We'll get to tropes in a minute with the second show, but like really, this is built on very familiar crime beats, even Miami beats. There's a bit where she dons a blonde wig and in an attempt to curry favour with one of her 12 victims, well, targets, I should say. It talks about, you know, Tony Montana and Elvira, you know, being played by Michelle Pfeiffer. So this knows what it is. This is a crime show based in Miami. If you are looking for that kind of thing, you will not be disappointed. If you're used to, I'm going to say, the quality of Paramount Plus in general, then like it fits right. It's right at home amongst their oeuvre, is what I'm going to say. But like,
well, you're trashing the streamer now as well.
but all in, I can't say I was bored, because it just bounced from massive set piece to kind of silliness, to set piece to silliness. Because it was playing all of the familiar notes that you were expecting on this kind of tropey show, like I guess there was a sort of satisfaction and smugness in going, well, this is exactly what's going to happen here. And then, of course, that is what happens, and you can feel smug about yourself for knowing that. But yeah, is it groundbreaking, unmissable TV? No.
Is it a spoiler to tell us why her family were killed in the first place?
I don't think so. So, I mean, like, again, it's kind of a funny one that you're trying to build great sympathy for this family. And they are like, you know, a classic American TV family where everybody gets on really well and all arguments are sorted out with like a few hugs and so on. But they're also taking part in some illegal activities themselves, and they have an involvement with the cartel, and something happens caused by Etta on a run that they are doing for this cartel that leads to their ultimate demise.
And is it saying something about, you know, immigrants? Because you mentioned that, like, she's treated, even though she's a native Floridian, that then she's treated like an immigrant. Is it saying something about that?
I mean, I suppose the most striking thing for me in relation to that is that there are several times where they reference ICE, as in, you know, like employers looking down their nose at her saying, we're going to call ICE on you because she's undocumented, she's being paid over the, you know, under the table, and it's all a little bit illegal, so to speak. So, yes, there's allusions to ICE, but we don't actually see ICE.
Right. Is this revenge series not the same plot as Anya Stark's killing spree in Game of Thrones? Yeah, well, you've probably seen a similar plot in many, many places. Right, our second show is Widow's Bay. You can stream new episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV+. Here's a clip.
So, you want to grab some coffee?
No, I'm good. Jerry was just taking me through some of your history.
You know what, Anna, I was just about to show Arthur the witch trial. Great source of pride. We caught him. We burned him.
Right, so the it's hard to describe. Is it a comedy or a supernatural comedy?
Right, so... Like, while, you know, while MIA plays very plain with genre, like, this, it wears its, you know, Tony Montana heart on its sleeve.
Yeah.
This is a really clever exploration of genre, and is really good at every single one of them. So it is a horror comedy show created by Katie Dippold. She's an American writer, best known for writing on Parks and Recreation, and she wrote the movies The Heat with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy, and Ghostbusters, which we won't talk about. But here, this is a complete creation of her own. And she must have been inspired by Jaws, and particularly the mayor.
Mayor
of Amity Island in Jaws, who, of course, wants everybody just to have a great time, even though there's a big shark in the water. And here we have Matthew Rhys playing the mayor of this island, Widow's Bay. I mean, even the name Widow's Bay is very on the nose, right? It tells you how safe it is living on this island. He plays Tom Loftus, who's somewhat of a blow-in to the island and has taken over the role of mayor, and is trying in this first episode to get it on the map with the New York Times. We heard the New York Times journalist in the clip there, and turn tourism around because it has been failing for decades on the island. And all of the islanders are very superstitious and kind of have bought into this, you know, idea that weird things happen on this island. And that is basically the plot. He's trying to turn it into a tourist hotspot. Meanwhile, the island is haunted. I mean, the first episode is basically a riff on the John Carpenter movie The Fog, because there is fog coming into the island and they're all just, you know, things are going bump in the night in the fog. The second episode is about a haunted hotel. So not quite The Shining exactly, but like kind of like the dimming, I don't know, right? Like somewhere in that oeuvre. And then the most recent one was about a sea hag, right? So each episode is following Tom, the mayor's efforts involved in this. Now, it's not like, you know, other horror comedies, like it is played absolutely seriously, right? Yeah, all of the horror elements, and parts of them are spooky, terrifying, like really jump in your seat, jump scares, all that kind of stuff.
All right, okay.
Like it's really, really well made in every single aspect of it. And I really want to especially praise the casting, right? So the casting is absolutely fantastic. You have Matthew Rhys, who people will know from a million things, most notably The Americans, where he was brilliant as Philip Jennings. He also was in a really good episode of Girls. He's a Welsh actor who is just a really good journey, you know, Hollywood journeyman. He can kind of do anything. He can go from nice to mean to creepy to all kinds of things. But around him then, they have cast a really fantastic array of oddballs and character actors. British actress Kate O'Flynn, she's probably best known for starring in the Channel 4 comedy The Rest of Them Burn. It's about evangelical and Christian family. Everyone else burns, I think. Yeah. She's the matriarch in that. You have Kevin Carroll as the sheriff, Dale Dickey as Rosemary, an actress I've never heard of before. Marilyn Bush plays the waitress in the local restaurant, Kathy. It's a really minor role, but I wanted to mention it because she runs away with every single scene she's in. And then Stephen Root, who'd be a very well-known character actor, he plays Wick, who's the former mayor who is kind of cluing the new mayor in to the new reality. Like, I would say it's a bit like, you know, I don't know how to describe it. It's a bit like Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets a really serious island drama meets a really funny comedy. It just is like, it is played absolutely seriously, but it is also really, really funny as well.
Yeah. Are a lot of these characters you described, is it the place populated with oddballs?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's a bit like Twin Peaks in that sense. Like, as in these very odd characters who just accept what's going on around them and go blindly into the fog that is full of ghosts ready to attack them at any moment. Like, it just understands exactly what it is as a show. It is not like anything I've ever seen before. It is really funny and scary in equal measure. I mean, there's like the second episode particularly set, you know, this is kind of like bottle episode sort of set in a hotel, an inn overnight where all of the locals say you can't open it to the tourists, it's haunted, and they dare the mayor to go spend the night in the inn, which he does, and things go bump in the night. It's just like really, really good.
Yeah. So, but Matthew Rhys's character, if he's trying to get tourists in, is he refusing to believe there's any supernatural stuff going on?
He is slowly coming to terms with the island being the island, right? Yeah. So, like, this island is like the second cousin of the island from Lost, right? Like, things happen on this island, and the locals on this island admit, you know, they don't go to the mainland. There's a superstition that if they go to the mainland that they'll pass away. His father, Matthew Rhys's father in the show, was from the island, and he only spent his summers there. So he's somewhat of a blow-in. He doesn't know all of the ways, of the island, but he just really wants to build it into something and really like loves it in his own way. And it's about kind of balancing the local politics, the horror and the comedy in one very interesting package.
Yeah. And so is each, now obviously there's a through line in the series, but it sounds like very much the kind of bottle episodes as well, to a certain extent.
Yes. So far anyway, right? Like certainly these opening three, and you know, there's a new one coming now on Wednesday, have all been about creating a new evil for him to deal with, but not even necessarily solving, if you get me. It's more just sort of him awakening to the reality of what is lying in wait.
Yeah, indeed. Didn't Matthew enjoy The Americans so much that he married his co-star wife? Now that's method acting, says Danny. Did he did? I can't remember her name now. But
Kerry Russell.
Kerry Russell, who's great, who's in The Diplomat. Right, our third show is Should I Marry a Murderer? You can stream the entire series now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
Imagine you fall in love with someone who made you feel accepted, wanted, seen, who made you feel whole and loved and special. And you are just so happy. And then they say to you, I've done a horrible, horrible thing. To remain in love, you have to keep this secret that you know is going to destroy you. But if you reveal it, then you destroy everything. I mean, what would you do?
There you go. That pretty much sums up what the entire series is about, I imagine. Is it a spoiler to tell us what the husband did?
No, I don't think
I think the title maybe gives that one away anyway. Should I marry a tax fraud?
So this is part of the true crime, you know, canon. And like, that is a very overpopulated canon at this point, right? Mm. There's no end to true crime documentaries that you can find out there. And they're all riveting because they all involve often the untimely death of somebody, and that is macabre in its own way. But often they're very disappointing, as in they're infuriating, they don't come up with any answers, they make a few suggestions, but they don't really do anything. And what I like about this is it is a complete open and closed shut case, as in we know the outcome of every single aspect of it. So who we heard in the clip there is Caroline Moorhead. She's a pathologist, a very accomplished woman living from Glasgow. And roughly pandemic time, she went through a really terrible breakup, and she, like many people in moments of post-breakup crises, turned to Tinder to find new life, and matched with this hunky 6'4", you know, guy an hour out of Glasgow who was like running a country estate and out shooting and just a real man's man. And she falls absolutely head over heels in love with him.
Okay.
And so head over heels in love with him that after a few brief months, he kind of proposes and she very gladly accepts. And suddenly they're getting married, at which point he then reveals to her that one evening he and his brother, after drinking in a pub, knocked down a cyclist and buried him.
Okay.
And then she finds herself, and this is not a spoiler, I mean, that's the fundamental whole thing, should I marry a murderer? As you said, you know roughly what's going in. So fundamentally, it comes down to how does she approach this as a, you know, as a woman, as a professional, as even a pathologist, you know, like, as in, what am I going to do? I'm absolutely head over heels in love with this man. This relationship is really good for me. And yet I know this terrible secret that he and his brother are hiding. Am I going to destroy their lives? Am I going to blow up my own life? Yes, I am. What does that mean? And what are the outcomes of that? So if it sounds like a sort of lurid, like, you know, something you would see on the cover of a magazine like Woman's Way circa 1999. Yeah, it kind of is that, right? But that's really only the first episode. Then it goes into a much more interesting discussion about the role of witnesses and the role of the police in their protection of witnesses. And then it goes even further, looking at how the stress of living with this, a secret like this might completely overwhelm your life and what that'll do for you and your career. And it just really goes into very interesting places. Now, Caroline herself is a very flawed narrator, but like an openly flawed narrator of her own life story here. Like, she acknowledges the mistakes that she made along the way, as well as championing the right decisions she made along the way and how that has affected her life. And I found her compelling and odd, but more compelling than odd, if you get me. The other thing that's sort of really striking in this is just how much B footage they have of videos taken by herself of her and Sandy, who is her or was her fiancé, I should say. Well, spoilers.
Well, I think we there wouldn't be a Netflix series about it if she kept the secret, I think.
Just the amount of footage she was taking of herself, and like, it is undeniable that you see the incredible effect that the stress of this entire event had on her and her psyche across, you know, a relatively short period of time. I mean, their relationship did not go on for years and years and years. Now, I should say the man who was killed, Tony Parsons, he was a cyclist, and he was on a charity cycle across Scotland when he was knocked down in the rain.
Gosh. I mean,
it is a very, very tragic story. The BBC did already make a documentary about him specifically, which is called The Vanishing Cyclist. So, like, his version of this story has already been told, and this is very much her version of the story. But it does sort of reflect even like misogyny and how the police would treat someone who they just think is better able to handle the situation than they actually are, simply because, you know, they're sort of looking at her going, well, you're a very clever doctor. Why aren't you doing better at this? When really, yeah, yeah. She's a flawed human being at the end of the day.
Yeah. Okay, those three shows are MIA. You can stream the entire first season now on Paramount Plus. Widow's Bay, you can stream new episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV Plus. And Should I Marry a Murderer, you can stream the series now on Netflix. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.